It must be Thursday. Welcome to Learning Unwrapped, a talk show about your most important life skill, brought to you by International Broadcast Media TV. Thank you very much. And I am your host, Dr. Nancy Sulla, and I'm excited about the topic tonight with technology as a game changer. I became a teacher in the late 70s and always wanted to be a teacher since I was 5 years old. And I took a left-hand turn somewhere and went off into the field of computer science, taught myself some computer programming languages, became a programmer, systems analyst, was promoted to manager. And I just woke up one day and said, what am I doing? My calling was to be in education. So I started looking around, and sure enough, there was a school district that was looking to introduce technology into, into the schools. I was just explaining to my my guests here that we're having red tide down here in Florida. So if I have a coughing fit, they'll start talking. Anyway, I went to work in the Mahwah school system in New Jersey, and I started to build a computer program there. And what I noticed was that in the business world where I was, technology was just infused into my day. I used it for communication, collaboration. We even had our own email system before email was email. And when I went back into the school, there were the computers back in, this was the early 80s. The computers were in a computer lab. They had a room of their own, a teacher of their own, a curriculum of their own. And they were really separated from what else happened in school. And I would walk around and see kids in classrooms just kind of looking at their teacher, listening. And I thought, you know what? This tool of computer technology has the ability to be a game changer in education. And I really set out to think about how that would be possible. So I designed this model framework, the Learner Active Technology Infused Classroom. And actually next week, the very first ever Learner Active Technology Infused Classroom, other than myself, will be on the show. But I wanted to see how technology could make a difference. And I have decades of stories along those lines. And one of them is that when I'd started my company, while I was still working, I was doing some consulting on the side. But then I finally decided in 1994 that I had to commit fully to working as a consultant in schools to, at first, think about technology as the game changer. And then that just morphed into, you know, redesigning instruction throughout. I went on to get a doctorate in educational administration so that I could learn more about seeing the whole big picture. Well, anyway, 1995 is the year, and I hired my very first employee ever. And he worked with me for a couple of years and then decided that he actually wanted to go out and hit the big time in the computer industry, became a big mucky-muck IT guy. And then years later, returned, called me up and said that he really, you know, I think he missed me, but he wanted to come and work with me. And he is my co-host tonight. He is the, originally was the vice president of technology innovation. Hey, Boyd.
Hi.
But is now the vice president of technology as well as finance operations. It is Boyd Edelson. Welcome.
Hi, Nancy. Hi, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right. So yeah. Tell me about something you learned this week.
Actually, I learned that this week is the great conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn.
I know.
Pretty exciting. You know, this is kind of an astronomy week. Earlier this week was the Geminid meteor shower, too, which was very exciting. So, So hopefully the skies will be clear this week. It's certainly cold out there, but hopefully the skies will be clear, too. So it should be nice viewing.
Yeah. You have snow up there in New York?
Oh, yeah. Lots of it. Mm-hmm. About a foot and a half.
So we've got some fun guests, as you know, that we've selected for tonight. So let me first share that I met Roland Antoine through a friend, actually, and he was one of my guests when I was asked to be on the Mark Lee online dinner party, which is also hosted here on Wednesdays from 4 to 7. And so we had a great time. But by the end of the show, I just said, I just didn't have enough of Roland. Like, I wanted to hear more. And Roland's got a big job because he handles instructional technology support for all of Texas. He works for the Texas Education Agency. And formerly, not too long ago, he was with the Dallas school system as the director of educational technology and the deputy chief technology officer. And this is the piece I like. In 2017, He was one of National School Boards Association 20 to watch educators. So please welcome Roland Antoine.
Thank you, Nancy.
Hi, Roland.
How's it going?
Good. So, Roland, what have you learned this week?
I learn stuff every day in what I do. Some of the good, some of it challenging. But there's one thing in particular that I learned today, just today, as part of another group I work with. I was going through some information that it was a presentation from the EdTech Genome Project. Mm-hmm. And one of their points was 85% of the $13.2 billion in technology funds that get spent every year, educators feel like it goes to waste. And what's really interesting about that is that was from a presentation that they posted in 2019, prior to the pandemic. And so I was thinking about what are the implications of that when we went into the pandemic and why certain things might be happening now. So that was an interesting piece of information.
That's intriguing. Right. Yeah, we have to have that study done again.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be fun to talk with you tonight about technology from the big, big perspective. I'm going to bring in our second guest. Our second guest is actually a first grade teacher in Nyack, New York, and she connected with us a while ago, and we started working in the Nyack school system to design learner-active, technology-infused classrooms, which after that mouthful, we will just call it LADIC. So she is a LADIC teacher in the first grade, and she's been teaching this way. It's a very student-centered and student-driven approach to instruction. She's been teaching this way for a bunch of years, so she's actually now also one of our teacher leaders in the district, supporting her colleagues who are moving down this road as well. Please welcome Dr. Christina Clark.
Hi, thank you so much, Nancy. How is everybody?
Great.
Welcome. So Christina, what have you learned this week that you'd like to share with everyone?
You know, being a first grade teacher, one of the things that I do every day is I read with my students, and we've been exploring nonfiction. So we were reading this book called What Would You Do If Something Tried to Eat You? And it was about how animals escape from predators. So I learned that there is a gecko in South America that actually walks on water to escape its predator. So I thought that was a pretty interesting fact. And my students were all just like, whoa, that's the coolest thing. So
Wow. That
was what I learned this year about the gecko that walks on water to escape.
Wow. Well, you'll have to share with them that down here in Florida, we had a cold snap a week or two ago where the temperature dipped down into the 40s, which is unusual. And the lizards actually dropped from the trees. And it's because their metabolism goes into a state that causes them to just look like they're frozen, and then they fall. And I tell my friends, don't worry, because, a couple of days later, they're just going to get up and walk away. Once they have to absorb the sun in order for them to have the heat for their bodies to work. So that could be a fun addition to your story time.
There we go. I'm going to write that down, share that with them.
Get that one down. And the last guest that we're going to bring into the conversation tonight is a gentleman that I met when I was asked by the University of Pennsylvania's Excellence in Equity Consortium to present on executive function and equity, make that connection. And I was running a workshop in Philadelphia, and Jim Gosser was there, who's an instructional technology coach there. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the workshop, we got this huge blizzard that we were expecting, maybe a little dusting, but we got this blizzard. We're all still looking out the windows. And what I was pleased about was that Jim and his colleagues were having such a good time with me that they didn't actually want to leave the workshop. But we finally decided that post-lunch, we should just close it up. I ended up getting snowed in for another day, but Jim and I have kind of kept touch through texting now and then. So I'm very happy to welcome Jim Gosser to the table as well. Come on in.
Hey, what's up, all? How are you?
Hello.
Good, good.
Yeah, snowstorm. We met in a snowstorm. When is there a snowstorm today? It's crazy.
That's true.
So, Jim, what have you learned this week?
So I guess going off of that, I mean, like I heard Roland say, we're learning all the time, but today it was the snow day. That's what I learned today. How important it is. There were some districts around my area, you know, we got hit, we got about 12 inches. I think New York, you got 20 something. I don't know how many, but some schools decided we've been doing virtual and they went virtual. They kept rolling with the virtual teaching, which is good. They don't miss those days, but I just felt like our district decided to go with it. It's a snow day, right? So keep them off. It's a snow day, leave the kid, let them do what they need to do. And I just watch my kids, you know, they're outside, they're playing, they're having fun, they're helping us shovel, everything like that. So I don't know, I just feel like that's what I learned. I learned the importance of the snow day.
I was talking to some teachers whose districts were staying open because they could continue to offer remote instruction. But we talked about building into the day, going out and playing in the snow, coming back, writing a story about it, or you know, because you can't ignore a good snowstorm.
No, it's great. Meet your neighbors, you know, hang out. Oh, and the second thing is I need to buy a snowblower.
Yeah, I heard it was quite a snowstorm up north. Yeah. So before we dive into technology, I did want to share some exciting news. My new book is coming out. It's in production now, but they actually have a cover, and it is called Reinventing the Classroom Experience, Learning Anywhere, Anytime. And the whole idea is, it came out of this pandemic, if you use certain structures and strategies, and Christina can talk more about that, that work as well in school as they do at home, it really doesn't matter where your students are. So if they're coming back to school, you don't have to say, well, now that we're going to be in school, we'll learn this way. And if you're going remote all of a sudden, you don't have to say, well, we're going to go remote, so let's talk about what that looks like. It looks the same. And so that's what the book is all about. But I particularly wanted to bring it up during this show, because if you look at the cover art, a lot of times on books, they use stock art and put things together, put images together. I just wanted an original image. So Boyd's daughter, India, she actually is at the Fashion Institute of Technology, studying graphic arts and animation. And she listened to me talk about this idea. So if you look at the lower left corner, this idea of all of the tools that we use in the classroom, the physical classroom as we knew it, and how we move toward learning anywhere, anytime. And I love that she took my concept and created this concept graphic where we move from the typical classroom tools to a computer, to then wireless, to then social connections and out to the world in general. And so I'm very thankful that Boyd raised his daughter up well to be a very talented person and give me a very good price on designing graphics for me.
Bargain. That's a great cover you got there.
It was a bargain.
She was happy to do it.
All right, let's start talking about technology as a game changer. Roland, I'm going to go to you first and ask you to talk about what you're seeing in the big picture in Texas when schools closed and open, and what we're doing, and how do you see technology being a game changer?
Okay, I'm not trying to sound anti, but let me say it this way. Technology can be a game changer, but as long as the technology actually takes into account the what I like to call the human infrastructure that utilizes it. One of the interesting things that happened when everybody went remote was the agency went remote, and we were able to go remote in a week. We were able to continue to do what we needed to do without the slightest bump in the road, to the point of where we're still remote. But that's because we were using systems that were designed for business. In education, what we are seeing is these systems, although they can and they do get, are able to make learning possible, they're not 100% well designed for the human infrastructure that they're supposed to support. And what I mean by that is, if you're thinking about, you know, I know that one of the terms that we use for this, we call it remote learning. And it's not really remote learning, it's learning to virtual presence. Because remote learning implies that there is going to be minimal contact, you know, kind of like when you're doing your degree online, right? You're not staring at your professor every day. But the way school districts are trying to work is they're dealing with, they're doing it to where the teachers are supposed to be making contact with students every day. And so
I love that phrase, learning through through virtual presence.
Yeah, because that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because the point of it is to be able to create that same type of presence. Well, not same type of presence, but to create a level of presence that would be supportive enough to the student to help them move through their learning activities.
Right.
So it's a different paradigm, but we don't, the systems that we use are not designed to support that.
Right. And it's interesting because when we, when schools went remote in March, the teachers, and Christine, I'll have you talk a little bit. I mean, I know you were just getting started with first graders, but the teachers that we talked to and heard from said that when they, because they were running learner active classrooms, students are working on a real world problem they're trying to solve. And then they have activity lists that they use in order to learn whatever they have a felt need to learn. And then they've got an activity list that can give them options for learning, and they schedule their own time throughout the day. And they use the teacher as a resource, and they attend lessons with the teacher if they opt in to wanting that direct instruction from the teacher, or they engage with the teacher through a discussion, et cetera. And we heard that the shift over to remote was seamless. It was nothing. And I love that phrase. So I'm going to steal that, Roland, of virtual presence, because what that did was, like this LADIC framework allows the teacher and students to have this almost a virtual presence, even when they're in the classroom together. You know, if students need help, for instance, they would put their name on the help board and then the teacher would see that and at some point connect. Well, that works as well as it in school, and it works as well at home, because at home students just put their name on a digital help board. And then when the teacher is able, the teacher connects with them. So I love that idea of using technology for the virtual presence. So Christina, talk a little bit about, now your students were just getting started with LADIC in the first grade, but how did you see the shift, and how do you see technology as a game changer for them?
Well, when things started back in March, I was teaching third grade. So they were in a little bit of a different place. I was teaching third grade in March, and now I'm teaching first grade now. So I've been able to see both of the spectrum. So I love what you're saying, though, Roland, about it being more of a virtual presence, because back in March, you know, we were able to shift and make these instructional videos, you know, turn our lessons into, you know, click and play. But kids still needed that facilitation. They still needed to touch base with the teacher. They wanted to talk to us. They wanted to ask questions. And having the ability to communicate like this allowed me to give that critical feedback that we know moves learners. So, you know, we took what we learned from March, and now we transitioned to a new school year. And we're, you know, my district, like a lot of other districts, are in this hybrid place where I have kids in person, I have kids at home, I have kids coming in, you know, every other day and whatnot. And having the ability to communicate and bring all of my learners together has allowed us to build that community in the classroom that is so critical and important. Like, I run a morning meeting. You know, we sing our songs, and that's how we get to know each other. Because, you know, I have virtual kids that haven't been into the building all year. And it's important that those kids feel like they're a part of my classroom environment as well. You know, I have the ability then to conference them or do guided reading with them. So they're getting all the experiences that they would get in a brick and mortar, but now just in a different way. And, you know, I love when people will say, oh, well, they're little. Yes, they can. Kids can do whatever we tell them that they can do. Like, kids just need an adult to believe in them. I have a firm believer that, you know, if you tell kids the sky's the limit, then they're going to reach the sky. You know, and one of the things that I was so happy about being moved to first grade was was to show, you know, to show people that yes, kids can. Kids can be in control of their learning. My first graders, they get a digital schedule every day. You want to do math first, you go ahead. You want to do reading first, you go ahead. Here are the times you've got to meet with me. I mean, they even know how to share their screen, or, you know, they're sending me videos. Look what I did. So it's just, you know, we just have to believe in kids, and they will really rise to that occasion for us.
That's, I love that phrase. I think we need that up on the screen of kids just need an adult to believe in them. That's a wonderful thing. And I know even kindergarten teachers were saying to me when we were training them in the summer as to how to run hybrid, and even in March, April, May, when we were helping teachers kind of get through remote times. And there was that thought that, oh, but the kindergarten students, how are they going to? And I was like, kindergarten students don't even know what school looks like. So this will be all new for them. And trust me, I'll be in a Zoom call with one of my consultants who has a young child, and there are several of them who do. And, you know, in the middle of the Zoom call, the three-year-old is coming over with like, Mom, can I have your phone? I want to play this game. And they like take the phone, they go off, they navigate their way. They do better than the adults do. So we definitely don't have to worry about the kids in terms of knowing how to navigate so much. I'm going to say that with a caveat. If you live in a household where you have access to that kind of technology, you're fine. But there's an equity situation too. And that is that if you don't have access to that kind of technology at home, then it is a little difficult for you to suddenly be on your own. So we'll spend some time talking about that too, as to how we bridge the equity gap with technology. But Jim, I want to hear from you. What have you seen technology as a game changer?
Oh, a lot. Well, first of all, Roland, when you said virtual presence, I think you hit the hole. We were hashtagging that out, I guess, right? But I've seen all of that. You know, there's so many things with these, the tools that we have now that, you know, a lot of teachers were hesitant about in the past. And I, of course, the pandemic was bad and all, but I've seen so much that has been done. And like you were just saying with like kindergarten kids, you should see the stuff they're doing. It's amazing. They're making videos. They're using green screens. You know, like they're looking this stuff up and finding out answers to things at such a young age. And like Christina, you said you teach first grade. I bet you're seeing all kinds of new things that they're doing, and they wouldn't be able to do that unless they had this tool, right? Unless they had the technology to do it, and now they do. And like you were saying with equity, CF, do they have the devices? Like that was one thing with we tried to make sure. They already have a device. Does everybody have what they need? You know, things like that. But once those kids got the tool in their hand, they just went at it. You know, like they made just some of the stuff that's coming out. Like for, and even for example, we've had some students making little videos to instruct the teacher on how to use, say, Zoom or our math program. I just got a video today from a student that the teacher was having an issue with the math program, like how they're supposed to click on things. Well, the student made the video, you know, so, and then sent it in to the teacher, and the teacher sent it out to the students. It was like, they make it instead. So you're just seeing this improvement over time of students just going at it, you know, and not being just, you know, spoon fed in a way. They're just like, okay, go do what you do. Here's the tool. What can you do with it? And they're showing us some amazing things. That's what I've been seeing.
That's cool.
That's that game changer.
Technology is the game changer.
Right. Now,
you brought up there, you know, if you watch the intro, for those of you who were here to see the intro, I talk about, we put up in the intro, the power of engagement, empowerment, and efficacy, because that's what I'm all about. It's like, how do we design classrooms that engage students, empower them, and create them as more efficacious learners? So I'm going to start asking the guests to share stories they have of where they've seen that technology has engaged students or empowered them, helped them to become problem solvers and success. So while you guys are thinking on that, I just want to welcome our live audience and tell you that I thrive on live. So I love when we have a live audience, and I see that we've got some great comments in the chat. And so our director behind the scenes, Dr. Carrie Gentner, is putting up different quotes as we see them. So, you know, keep thinking on your end too, How have you seen technology as a game changer? Now, it's a little hard because you can't write long comments or they don't really fit well on the screen. But think about what are some of your favorite apps, some of your favorite uses of technology, software, websites even. And if you just put them in the chat, we'll get bring them up too, because my goal in this show is to create a conversation between the people that are on screen and the live audience at home. So thank you for being here. Love you for that. And let's go. Technology, engagement, empowerment, efficacy. Pick one. Who wants to start?
I'll go if you want. Sure. I guess one of the things that I saw and talking about apps, things like that. And that's one of the, like we're saying about game changers over time. You know, it's just, we always say like there's an app for that. And if you notice, all these apps started getting made because they were trying to find out solutions for education and created an app for that, and created an app for that, and created an app for that. One that I liked a lot, and we use it in our district, is Nearpod. And there, I think there's another one. Pear Deck is like the other style of it. And I've noticed that too. There's like there's apps, and then there's other groups that do other apps that are the same kind of thing, but might do it better. Who knows? But the reason why I like Nearpod is I always say to teachers when I was instructing new teachers, all right, have you ever in a classroom asked a question and ask students to raise their hand, right? And you only get one answer, right? Okay, right, pick that student out and answer. Well, I was like, well, why don't you try Nearpod now? Instead of having to answer from one person, now you can get everybody's answer, you know? So instead of just one. So it kind of, that was like one app that I loved because of that fact. It was easy to get everybody's opinion, you know, everybody's answer to it rather than just one student, you know? So that was good for us. So we started running with that. My district, so there's one.
Well, the interesting thing is, you know, students and teachers, students and adults alike, I should say, follow this. We use the Myers-Briggs personality inventory, and some of us, like myself, are very extroverted thinkers, which means we kind of think with our mouths. So I will just start talking, and then while I'm talking, change, you know, and you see kids like that in the classroom. But there are others who are introverted thinkers, which means they like, you know, like the old E.F. Hutton commercial, they like to think through it before they speak. And I will say that I am a flaming E, and my co-host here tonight is a very deep I. So Boyd won't get a word in edgewise unless I say so.
I'll have a lot of great ideas to share after the show, though.
So go ahead, share some with us now, or questions, or
okay. Actually, something I'm thinking about, and Jim brought it up about students being able to volunteer, and it goes back to my business experience and that of networking. I love networking, and I think one of the biggest game changers in ed tech, and it's something that I saw when I came back to ed tech after being away from it for like 15 years, is how networking has changed everything and brought collaboration to like a new level. And you don't even have to be remote. Even before the pandemic hit, and even before we were put all out into our individual homes, real incredible collaboration was taking place in the classroom. And that was enabled by technology. You know, the sharing of ideas, the collection of ideas, and they're not lost. They're recorded, they're stored, they're able to be built upon. You know, the collaboration has taken things to a different level. And now that we're in a anywhere, anytime kind of world of learning, it's really growing by leaps and bounds now. I think lots of teachers who were originally afraid, you know, going into this, they might have been reluctant to use it. It's pushing the limits now. They're really being forced to come up with some really great ideas.
Thoughts about that, our guests?
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I definitely think that technology aids with collaboration. You know, my students used to publish a newsletter every week for parents, and, you know, they'd all be in one Google Doc and, all right, I'm going to take social studies, you take science. And like, you know, by the end of, you know, on Thursday, they'd start by Friday, you know, be ready to be published and sent home. And it was so great that they could do that. But I think also we need to think about how we're purposefully using technology. And just because we have all of these apps and things, you know, right, making sure that we're using them the right way. Like, one of the things I found that was really great during all this was still encouraging my students to use paper and pencil, like, you know, trying to get them to write on the screen to solve a math problem. It's like, wait, just here, take a piece of paper, hold it up to your camera. Okay, show me that you solved it. So we think even using some of those integrated apps, you know, or using the tools that are already there and not making things more complicated just because, you know, oh, we have this app, let's use it. Like, still write on a piece of paper, but use your, you know, use a document to put all those ideas together. You know, it's easier to revise when you can just cut and paste rather than, you know, erase. Or I remember when we used to cut the paper up and, you know, retape it and glue it into places for kids. So,
right, right. There are so many opportunities, but let's also keep a little of what we used to do, the physical world. You know, let's not lose the physical world for the virtual world. I saw that Lauren, there was a comment up here from Lauren that her kids were writing their spelling words in the snow. I like that. Oh, sight words in the snow. It's a perfect thing. All right. What else? What else?
Well, what I was going to say is that in order for technology to be used successfully, teachers have to step back and actually let students engage with it. Back in a billion years ago, when I was just a technology coordinator, I was working on a project where we were introducing Chromebooks to a specific set of teachers. And I had a couple that did not embrace them as readily as everyone else. So to help them out, I told them that I would teach their classes together, both their classes together, all day for a day and show them how to do this. And basically it was a collaborative activity with these students, because one of the things I told them, I said, you know, now that your students have this, you never have to create a presentation again because they can do it. All you have to do is give them a framework. And that's what I did. I had students in groups creating a presentation about, I forget what it was, taxonomy. That was it, taxonomy. And so part of that was when I would present the task, I made an error in the structure, knowing that someone was going to find out, because they're going to go look it up. And in every class they did. Now, the cool thing about it is by the time I got to the last period, one of their classes, I guess, had the same teacher for two periods, I had one of the students ask me if they could teach it. And so I literally went and sat down in the back of the class and let the student run the classroom.
That's empowerment.
That's awesome.
So, you know, the question there is like, they still learned, although I didn't teach them anything. I made them go find it. And they were occupied the whole period. I think they may have learned it a little bit better than me standing up there and telling them about it.
Yes.
But that requires a willingness to let go of some things.
Yes.
And I think part of the challenge that we've had with learning in the virtual presence era is that people are taking how they would normally approach instruction, which may not be completely student-centered, and trying to make that happen in the virtual presence world.
Right.
Like, I've heard tales of 50-minute Zoom lectures and things of that nature. I'm like, how can anybody talk across Zoom? I mean, who does that? I mean, but apparently it's happening out there. So I think part of the challenge that we have seen with making this transition has been, you have to change how you do things to actually leverage what the technology can do to help your students.
Right. Right. And you know, it's actually, there's two parts to that. There's not only do you have to let go in certain respects of using technology in your classroom in this kind of environment, but at the same time, you have to be more deliberate. You have to be more aware of what you're doing and why you're doing it and what the impact's going to be. And you have to think of every little action has to be planned. But at the same time, you have to give your students and the class and the people you're working with freedom to do their own thing. So it's finding that balance that is a challenge for many people. It's easy to go too far in either direction.
Well, there has to be some very well planned intentionality with that. Mm-hmm. You know, you're setting them up to go in a direction. You're not just saying, hey, go find.
Right.
You're actually saying, go find, but what you're going to find is the stuff that I want you to find.
Right. Yeah. We use at IDE, we have the metaphor of the teacher is ferry versus teacher is bridge. And in the learner active classroom, the teacher is a bridge. And I think it's really strong here because the bridge is not just letting them go. It's allowing them to progress at their own pace within a very carefully defined framework, right? The bridge is it supports them. It has the guardrails to prevent them from going off in another direction, but it's still allowing them the freedom to move forward at their own pace. So it finds that middle place, that metaphor.
Yeah, it's funny if I could just say, like, go off of that as well. I did this with my.
If you're hearing that, that's my dog. apparently, someone has.
I'm like, who's being attacked?
Rolling household. No. I just, like you were saying about them, just kind of say figure it out a lot. it's funny. We have this. This meme that we do at my school with some friends of mine, because I know that they know how to work technology, you know, and they'll ask me questions and I'll just send them the meme, you know, like you can do it, you know, to a point of the other, it was a couple of weeks ago, I was at my friend's house, and his daughter's like 10, 11. And he just moved into a new home and he was, like he wants to drywall his like, right. And we were just talking and I said to him, I said, she could do it. You know, let your daughter, try it out. He's like, hell no, what are you talking about? She'll never be able to do that. I was like, hold on a second. I was like, and then I started just asking her questions. I'm like, okay, how do you drywall something? I don't know. And then what did she do?
Googled it.
She Googled it, right? And she looked it up and she saw the steps of it. And we were going to this conversation. I was like, this is how they're learning now. You know, like they're finding the information out. Like, that, don't think that they can't do it. They'll find it out. You know, let them try. And not that she was going to, maybe she'd drive all in the house now. I don't know. But, you know, but that's what she did right away. Her first thought was after I asked her that question, here I go.
Yeah.
That's a game changer where we're building a shared repository of human knowledge.
Right.
It really is. You search for that a video of how to drywall. You're going to find contributions from people all over the planet. Literally all over the planet. Somebody's got an opinion about their particular way or their particular method of using drywall, right?
And you find what you like, you know, from there and learn from it.
Yeah. And we need to encourage the kids to do that. We need to encourage them to be able to find their way. As you said, I like, you know, with the limits, I think of it as a swimming pool. The classroom is a swimming pool. Mm-hmm. It's like there are edges around, but while you're in the middle of that pool, you can go anywhere. And that's what you want to do. All right. Now I do need to take a break here to basically thank International Broadcast Media Television, because I am grateful to have this show, this platform, to bring good people together to talk about unwrapping learning and figuring out what does learning look like, whether you're the youngest, the oldest. We're going to do a show on pets as well. And my producers, Nick and Kim, thank you very much for producing and creating this fabulous network. And of course, we have Gwen Fawn, who is behind the scenes as our director, and Mark Lee, who discovered me, I like to say, and hooked me up with this show. And that brings me into my segment, What's in Your Mug? So today, I have a mug that's going to be hard to read, so I'll read it to you. It's a good tech mug. It says, sorry, but your password must contain at least 8 characters, upper and lower case letter, a symbol or number, a hieroglyphic, a haiku, a musical note, the feather of a hawk, and a drop of unicorn blood. And isn't that the way you feel these days when you're trying to create a new password? And just when you thought you knew how to create passwords, they come up with something new you have to add into it. Or no, you can't use this or that or the other thing. Now, as far as what's in it, today I have gone with a wonderful organic coffee. Let me get that in the middle there. Equal exchange, called Mind, Body, and Soul. So that's my coffee for today. That's what's in my mug. Jim, let's go to you. What's in your mug?
Well, I got this mug. So here you go. It says Life Begins After Coffee. It's actually my wife's. So I make sure I talk to her after her coffee, her mug. And what I have in my mug actually is a friend of ours gave us an espresso machine. It's awesome. And it comes with like its own mixes and all. There's this mint coffee that just came out with it. It's so good.
Nice.
Yeah, really good.
Flavor going.
Yeah, right.
Boyd, what's in your mug?
Well, I have my IDE mug, of course, from our holiday gala. And on the other side is our summer logo from 2018, Changing the World. And in it is Arizona green tea.
Ooh. Nice.
One of my favorites. Yep.
Amelia, yes, it's great.
We've got Amelia's drinking Nespresso. I saw some hot chocolate and marshmallows go by. Some soup. That's a good one. Chamomile tea. Let's see. Dave says his mug simply reads Yeti, and he's drinking Columbia Supremo from Trader Joe's. All right, Christina Clark, what is in your mug?
I have some peach tea in my mug with a little bit of honey.
And hold that mug a little higher.
It's a gift from a student teacher.
That's a good one. That's a good one. All right. And Roland, we didn't hear what's in your mug, right?
Well, I'm boring. It's just water, and it's a Starbucks mug because I think my kids stole my Google mug that I got while I was at Google, and they don't understand what the significance of that is. So,
hey, I can't imagine they did that to you. That's
well, water is good for you, and I would never call Starbucks boring, especially on international TV. Just
Especially that batch of water because it's got extra edgy hydrogen in it.
Oh, you're going with a special water.
Yeah, special water.
I like that. I like that. Better hydration. Yes. Wait, who has unicorn marshmallows? Ooh, Christina Chapman, you've got unicorn marshmallows. I want me some of them. My address is. All right, so let's see. We all hold up your coffee mugs and cheers to all of the educators out there and the parents and the kids who are using technology as a game changer. Appreciate that. Let's keep going. Boy, that was your cue.
Oh, that was my cue. I see. Okay. Well, I'm thinking back about, you know, game changers and we were talking about collaboration, and I'm thinking back on Roland's comment from the beginning of the show about virtual presence. And are there any technologies out there that anyone's encountered that is helping in this regard? Nancy and I and everyone at IDE, we found a product called GatherTown, which we find very exciting because it's kind of
it's a game changer.
It's a game changer because it's like a game is what it is. It allows you to walk around like in a video game like Minecraft. And once you walk next to somebody, their face appears on the screen and you can have a video conference with them. And it really feels like you're there, like you're walking around and you'll just walk by somebody and you can have a conversation. You can even eavesdrop on people if you wanted to. You could be hiding behind a plant on the screen and be part of a conversation. But the cool thing about it is that it really does simulate the idea of presence. You know, it kind of lessens that separation that this barrier of a screen can create sometimes.
Yeah, and we, after our consultants had to reinvent themselves in March, you know, our consultants would go into schools and meet with teachers like Christina Clark, and you guys would brainstorm together and, you know, redesign the world. And then all of a sudden we're remote and we're connecting with people remotely and you're on Zoom all day long. And, you know, you see people like rubbing their eyes by the end of the night because it's really, you get Zoom fatigue. And not to take anything away from Zoom, because I love Zoom, but it does wear you down to be on camera all day. So we wanted to do in October, a 2-day retreat for our team. There's 29 of us. And one of the consultants had found this GatherTown, and it's gather.town. And you go in and you create a venue. So we ended up creating a venue that's an office, and it has a cafeteria. It has conference rooms. We added onto that a castle complete with a moat, and Boyd put a sea monster out in the water for me. And then we have a bar and lounge, which we, you know, use for Friday night game nights. And then we have a beach. And so we ran this day, and it was funny because we're all, our little avatars are running around going to different sessions, and all the consultants held sessions for one another. And we had yoga on the beach, and we had a meditation on the beach, and we had salsa dancing, and we had all kinds of fun things going on. And at the end of the day, people were saying, like, we don't feel as exhausted. And one of the consultants, I had to watch my language here because it is TV. And I was told that Carrie backstage doesn't have a little censor bleep to cut me out. But so one of the consultants who's probably about my age, and, you know, we hang out a lot. And she said to me, no, what's so great about this is, like, you feel good because you're actually up and moving around all day. And I said to her, you haven't actually gotten off of your fat blank all day. And we laughed so hard because we said, you're moving an avatar around psychologically. Mm-hmm. You feel like you're moving and interacting. Right, boy?
Right. It creates that illusion. And it's almost like the real thing.
Yeah. So we've actually now created a professional development center, and we're running professional development there. And teachers and principals are coming and saying, I had one superintendent. I said, well, let's just meet, because I also have a sales office on the beach. And we walked down to the end of the beach, and, you know, he was very stressed because of everything going on with COVID. And we sat down on these two chairs by the beach. And when you get down to the beach, you actually hear the surf. And he was like, wow. And then we just sat there talking, and he said, this is so calming. And so I think that I've been talking with the gentleman who created it. They are a couple of students who graduated college in 2019, and they have created something I think is going to be a game changer. Mostly right now in business, they really aren't positioned to have children in there. You know, there's all sorts of privacy issues, but I'm working with them on that, because I said, can you imagine, Christina, running the LearnerActive classroom where your kids could be avatars running around?
Oh, I'm already all over the avatar thing. You had me at avatar. I mean, wait, I could be in the digital world, and there could be, you know, whole gamification is my thing. So,
you have to, the next time an IDE consultant is coming to NIAC virtually, you have to say, I want to meet in your Gathertown PD center, and they'll give you a tour. And it's really fun. And you can interact with, interactive whiteboards, Google Docs, you know, video. You can put all of that in there, and you just click on it. We actually hid, I don't know, you know, a bunch of different $50 gift cards from Amazon. And so if a consultant was walking around and they see something to click, you know, they click on it, and because when you get close to a document, it lights up. So they would click on it, and then they would get all, like, it would say, congratulations, you've won a gift card. Go to the podium and announce it to everyone. You know, I want a gift card. Well, at that point, all of the consultants are now looking for gift cards. And there was one point where we were switching to go to another session, and Tanya, our executive vice president, and I were standing by one of the doorways, and the avatars are just all running around. So as they get close to you, you know, the cameras come up, and we said, do you need help getting to your next session? And they were like, no, we're just looking for gift cards. And everybody's like running around. So it was a game changer. And tomorrow we have our holiday team meeting, and we'll be back in Gathertown for that. But we actually now work in Gathertown. If we're not working with clients, we're in Gathertown, and we can walk up to one another sitting at a desk and engage. It's a game changer. Okay, I don't want to get too far down that road, because we'll try and get them on. But it always amazes me how quickly this time goes. Let's go back to engagement, empowerment. And I hope you guys are seeing the comments that, you know, we're getting lots of comments from our audience. Thank you so much, guys. And just keep them coming. And if you have any questions for our guests, or questions that you would like us to run by them, throw it in the chat, and try to come up with some real hard ones for us. And then Carrie will post them. But let's get back to engagement, empowerment, efficacy. Tell me another story.
I think one of the things that's really nice about this digital shift is the portfolio that it creates of students' work. You know, whether you're using Google Classroom or Seesaw or Schoology, you know, we kids now, like never before, have everything right there for them, and they can see their progress. Where sometimes, you know, children don't see the progress that they make over the year. They, you know, they don't see the progressions of their writing or even their ability to solve math problems. And now it's all there for them, and they can go back through it. Like, mm-hmm. I had a student that was celebrating the other day, you know, because he looked through his you know, his stream on Seesaw. And he's like, oh my goodness, I've done like 200 things this year already. That's amazing. And like, he was so proud of himself and he was, you know, up and celebrating. And I was like, that's awesome that you're celebrating all your good work. He's like, I'm getting smarter every day. I feel my brain's growing. And it was just like, but it was just the cutest thing. So like, even just having that piece where they can see everything that they're doing is so empowering. And then they're like, wait, if we can do this much, we can do more.
That's a great one. Yeah, that's true. I love it.
That's like badges. Is anybody using them in their classrooms? The badges? Yeah, that's been huge. So again, game changer. Giving out digital badges to kids, and they get those, and they love getting them.
Yeah.
The other thing I saw too on the comments is it was like Michelle O'Sullivan. I have to bring that one up. It was like the teacher's fear of technology held back students. This pandemic has really forced these teachers to face the fear. I just felt like that was something that did come out of this a little bit. I feel like we were transitioning prior to the pandemic, you know, of getting there and learning more about the technology and all this, and teachers were starting to grasp it. And then, yes, like this hit, and it was like, okay, I really need to do something, you know, and it did kind of force their hand a little bit. I feel like it's, and you start to see what these kids can do with this technology is it's been amazing. Like, I mean, what are you seeing in first grade? Like, just even from that, it's been great.
Yeah.
So I do like there's, you know, the bad that came out of this, and also good. And also once this is over, how it's going to change education. There's going to be a lot of differences coming.
And that's what I'm hoping. We won't go back. I know we're doing some work. The consultants were training some teachers to start school differently. And the kindergarten teachers were very upset that the kids wouldn't be able to do their meet and greet. And the consultant really walked them through how to create a digital meet and greet and came up with all these ideas. And the kids could use Flipgrid to make a video. And after about 2 days, she said she heard one of the teachers say to the other one, you know, even if we go back, you know, fully in person, I think we should still do the digital meet and greet. And to me, that's a game changer. That technology, if you get used to doing something during the pandemic, during remote and hybrid instruction, and you carry that back in the classroom to say, no, this could really be a game changer. That's powerful. I saw two questions pop up. So Carrie, put Shane's up and let's see, you know, who wants to, maybe Roland, you want to take a stab at this? Create the ideal, because, you know, I know you're doing some innovation work here. Create the ideal ed tech platform. What would that look like? And then I'm going to ask my other guests to weigh in on that.
I wouldn't. And here's why I say that.
I see you always start that,
right? Here's why I say that. I mean, the ideal ed tech platform, as far as as far as use by the individual, is already there. The capabilities are already there. One thing that probably does need to happen is a system that could coordinate schedules for virtual presence. One of the interesting things that came up in some discussions with some friends who still work for large school districts is, ideally, you want to be able to rearrange the school day in a way that does not fit what a normal student information system does, because normal student information systems like to think in terms of 50-minute periods. Right. And what you only need teachers interacting with students for probably about 20 minutes, and then students being moved into a place where they can interact with their peers for the rest. Maybe not at first grade, but maybe at
even at first grade.
Because part of that virtual presence is interacting with your peers. Mm-hmm. And so no scheduling system does that. We built a lot of, and this is something that another thought I've been preoccupied with. Everything that we built has been designed for face-to-face presence. Even the technology has been designed that. Mm-hmm. We have in K-12 have never thought about what do we really need to be able to to make things work for students who are remote. Well, I don't want to use remote, but who are not in the classroom with the teacher, because things need to operate a little bit differently there. And we have not built or considered how that would look.
Right.
So we took a bunch of tools that, and you know, teachers who are making this work, this is another reason why they need to be complimented highly, because we took a bunch of tools that weren't really designed for that and are making them work that way. But we really need to think about, okay, how do we make this work? Because if you can make virtual presence instruction work, then you can do some interesting things with that. Like, for example, at the high school level, back when I was the director of education technology, we also supported the computer science curriculum. And one of the interesting things that we did, starting to introduce it at the elementary and middle school levels, was we wanted to expand it at high school, but we could not find teachers that had those skills. I floated the idea of, well, we have video conference systems, right? So why can't we have a teacher at one school teach students at many schools? Now, understand, this was 2013 and it totally freaked people out at that point. So it didn't go over very well, because what? Teach the kids, like, yeah, you're going to get a group of kids that can have a room in the library and they can just interact with the teacher from there all the way across, you know, the city. So that didn't fly, but it can be done.
Yeah.
And that way you can, students that may not have access to certain classes in their district or in their area could actually take those classes with teachers in other places.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we don't really, we've not really thought about how do we make that work, how we build tools that make that work very, very invisible. So the perfect EdTech platform is one that is not one, because it's basically leveraging what already exists, but in a way that makes it easy for things to be scheduled and for teachers to be, I'm going to use this word because I can't think of a better one right now, distribute it in a way to where they can interact with students in at an optimal level.
Yeah. I've been talking a lot about this idea of learning anywhere, anytime. And, you know, if you really think about it, even if schools could go back remote, I mean, fully in person at some point, I think we need to hang on to this idea of hybridity, because think about this, you know, and for the parents who are out there, you know how you want to be able to go on vacation at a time that's not necessarily when the entire world is at Disney? Talking to you, Tanya. You want to pick another time that you can go? Imagine if you could leave school at any time and your child could still connect, could still be a part of that, could still learn. I know, for instance, when I was living in New Jersey and I had a place in Florida, wouldn't it be nice to go and spend winters in Florida? Well, if a school would allow your student to now connect virtually, you actually could. And what about students who are on home instruction or in a hospital, et cetera? We now have the ability to not have to have a different program for them. It's just learning anywhere, anytime. And I was talking to a superintendent the other day and I said, well, now that you've figured it out and you can teach, you know, we can teach learning anywhere, anytime, have you thought about the ability to enroll students from around the world in your school? And there was that, you know, like pause, because schools are so geographically bound right now. And I know that they have opened up to tuition based by, you know, somebody from a neighboring town could come. But literally, if we could get through again the policies and the way we set up schools, you really could have people from around the world joining in and being a virtual group together. So if we can dream it, we can do it. I'll play off that. Mm-hmm. Let's put up. We only have like a minute left and then we're gonna have to get us out of here, but we can roll over just a little bit. Enough to put up Mark's question. What app that exists now would you have used significantly if it had been around when you were a child? Jim, what app today would you say, oh, I wish that was around when I was a kid?
YouTube. Reason why, I mean, I learned so much from YouTube. I do, You know, like everything I do to my house, things like that. I watch a video, I do it. You know, if I had that when I was a kid,
yeah,
all kinds of stuff. I'm right there with you, Jim.
I'm right there with you.
Well, that's what we have to realize in education, that everything you need to learn is on the internet. Right. So the role of teacher as presenter of information has to leave. Instead, teachers need to be facilitators. And if you think about it, what you don't learn on the internet is deep analysis, is the discussion, is the pulling apart, synthesis, and putting back together, synthesizing. There's so much that teachers can do with kids. It's kind of like, go off and learn a little bit about this, and now let's come back together and dive in. And that's what my new book is about. It's five different ways of synchronous engagement that teachers should use, and none of them are teach a whole class lesson. So you gotta have to read the book to get to that. All right, app, something that exists today. Christina Clark, from your childhood, what do you wish existed that, of course, Christina, you were a child yesterday, but you know, go ahead.
Well, not quite yesterday, but I definitely would go with YouTube, but I think I probably would have done a lot of TikToks if that was around, because I would have been all over like the dance moves and stuff. That would have been my thing.
That's cool.
That totally would have been my thing.
All right. And Roland, what would you use?
I'm with Jim. YouTube. YouTube has literally saved me thousands of dollars in auto maintenance costs. And, so that poses an interesting question is, how do you start to leverage informal learning?
Leverage what?
Informal learning.
Yeah.
Because kids are learning stuff from YouTube all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's,
I don't have that answer, but that's the question.
You know, I'm a big fan of the five P's of PBL: problem-based, project-based, place-based, profession-based, and pursuit-based learning. And when you give a kid a real world problem to tackle, they just start going off and they learn much more. I mean, it goes back to when I was, I think I might have talked about this last week, where when I was working with kids and I had them engaged in learning math, and I didn't teach percentages. I didn't get to that chapter, but my students who were the students who were at the bottom of you know, the class on the, when you looked at all the test scores, not only did they pass the state test, but they outperformed the regular ed kids in percentages. And my principal couldn't understand why. And I was like, I don't know, you know, but I was a second year teacher, so I didn't know. But now I know. It was because I taught the entire class through problem-based learning. And there were so many opportunities. I just facilitated them, you know, going on more and more and more. All right, Boyd, you need to tell us your app and then we need to close out.
Oh, I was a big video gamer when I was a kid, all the time. Atari, ColecoVision, Intellivision. And I was happy with a little square just bouncing around the screen. So if I had today's video games, forget it. I would never have been outdoors. You never would have seen me.
That's probably true. Yeah. And there's so many. I mean, I would do all of that. I do think the ESPN Fantasy Football app is probably a favorite that I wish we had back in the day. And then I'm going to go back to GatherTown. I'm just in love with this app, and I know it's going to be huge. And, you know, Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook, if you're listening, one of you is going to try and buy them. But I already asked them, and they don't want to sell. But it's a powerful platform. So, all right, I can't believe that the hour is gone. I want to thank Jim, Christina, Roland, your amazing guests. Thank you for sharing all of your ideas about technology. I love you. And Boyd, of course, as my co-host, I appreciate you being here. And I love all the years we've worked together and all of the fun that we've had. And we'll continue to have more. So next week, and I know it's a little rough for a live audience on Christmas Eve, but I'm hoping we'll have a live audience. Our Christmas Eve show is going to be My Favorite Things. So I'll have a few of my favorite things as guests, and we'll talk about our favorite things when it comes to learning, our favorite stories, our favorite, you know, ways in which kids are learning, and we'll play around with that a little bit. And then we will be here on New Year's Eve, where we are going to revisit learning in 2020 or not. So those are the topics that are coming up. I hope that you will join me. Again, I thank International Broadcast Media TV. I hope that if you look on your screen someplace there, you will like our video, but you will also subscribe to International Broadcast Media TV so that you can see what's coming up. They have a lot of great shows, including, don't forget, Mark Lee's show on Wednesday nights from 4 to 7. So I have a couple of companies, and one of them, Innovative Designs for Education, is committed to positioning children to change the world. So it is only fitting for me to end this show with the kids of IDE and some of their friends as we move along. Thank you. I hope to see you next week. Love you guys. Don't forget to watch till the end.
Playing a game with puppies is so much fun because it's season. We have to get them in warm clothes and all that. Now it's fall. No, now it's winter actually. So it's really cool. So I got her a jacket and some pants. Now I have to get her shoes. I'm gonna put her like boots on because it's a little cold out there.
Hey IDE kid, it's time for story time. Woo! That's what I used to do back in when the pandemic first started. I mean, I used to read stories. My favorite was Go Dog Go. And every Friday I used to do cute little puppet shows. I had so much fun, it meant a ton to me, and I hope it meant the same to them. One of the kids started to want to read to me, which meant so much to me that she wanted to read to me and that my story time made her want to give me a story time.
I meet with my teacher and I read and spell on Seesaw every Tuesday. I like to do my Seesaw homework and like learn and play.
Thanks for watching Learning Unwrapped. Tune in next Thursday to talk about Dr. Shula's favorite things.